Welcome to Salty Cinema. I am Jacob Kimberg.
And I'm Bobo Chang.
Whoa. A little hot, a little hot on the mic there.
Sorry about that.
Hot on the mic. First time on a mic?
First time on this mic.
It's just a normal mic.
It's got this huge thing on it. I thought it would just flatten everything that I say.
No, you got to be careful. You don't want people with bloody eardrums after.
Well, then you just fix it after.
No, I can't fix it if you peek.
Fix it in post.
No, you can't fix peeking.
Can't?
There's nothing. Anyway, I am here in beautiful Burbank, California, and I am talking to one of my best friends.
In the world.
Bobo.
In a minivan.
Chang. He is a actor.
Correct.
And a father of two.
Correct.
And a husband of one.
Correct. Thankfully.
And we have known each other since we were 18 years old.
Wow. That's right.
We went to Biola together. We were roommates freshman year.
First roommate.
And been friends ever since.
That's right.
So
after the first couple weeks. So
you think it took a couple weeks?
Well, I think I thought you were my friend, and then I was like, I don't know if he really likes me.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't used to your personality right away. I was like,
interesting.
He doesn't talk to me very much. But sometimes he acts like he likes me, and then, but then we're also like in love with the same girl at the same
time. Yeah, that does complicate things.
It's pretty complicated.
Yeah, but you didn't know that until I told you much, much later.
Well, I mean, like, you know, yeah, but I kind of knew.
What do you mean you kind of knew?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I kind of knew.
How did you kind of know?
Well, I picked up on it.
That I was, like, talking to her too much?
Yeah, you know, you were laughing a lot with her.
Well, yeah, but she was, like, part of our friend group. So
yeah.
Eventually,
I was like, oh, maybe she's just part of our friend group.
So you're saying you were not surprised that night when I came to you and I was like, I need to tell you something. And we had our talk in the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
That was not surprising to you?
Not that surprising.
Well, it was probably surprising that I was confessing that.
Yeah, that was. I was like, dang, balls on this guy.
Well, I felt like I needed to tell you.
I appreciate that.
And then it wasn't weird.
No.
After that.
Not until after when you're in Japan and then you confess again that you're in love with her via email.
I thought you were going to say it got more weird when then you broke up and then I was.
And then there was that. After that. But even all through that, it was never that weird.
This show is not about relationships. This is a show about cinema. So let's get back on track here.
Cinema has relationships, though, so it's all relevant.
That's true. But I want to talk about acting.
Okay.
Okay, let's get a brief overview of mm-hmm. your career so far as an actor.
Yeah.
You graduated in 2008.
Yes, from Biola.
And then what?
Well... funny, it actually starts before that.
Well,
starts as a young child.
No, I don't need any of that. Just
well, okay. So, no, I mean, it really does start.
All right,
like,
say whatever you want.
High school, because I knew I wanted to get into film right away. Like pretty much in middle school, I knew I wanted to get into entertainment, and I didn't exactly know. So by the time high school came around, and I had an option to try to take a class mm-hmm. revolving around that. I don't do that.
I want.
I'm just kidding.
I want some light in here.
What sunglasses.
Is this?
You want sunglasses? Or
I
want
some
light.
Light.
There you go.
Is there? Oof. Okay, I just want to make sure that
that's better.
Okay, go ahead.
Are you going to cut all that out?
Maybe not.
So.
No, this is kind of bright, isn't it?
Well, just all of a sudden. Okay. Now it's dark.
We are, just so you
know. In a minivan.
For the folks at home, we're sitting in a minivan.
My Blueco, as the kids call it.
We are outside Bubba's house because the noise machine that
white noise machine
makes his children sleep is the loudest thing I've ever heard. I didn't know how they sleep with
it. It's amazing because it drowns out all their little things.
That's cool. Okay.
So if they're dying, then we don't know, but we can sleep. But yeah, so I started in high school because I was looking for a film class, and our high school in Clackamas, Oregon, didn't really offer film classes that I knew of. So then I was thought the next best thing was drama. So I took drama and found I had a knack for it, got into the plays. And then when I was going to Biola, I applied for the film school, didn't get in. And then because I wasn't in the film program, like you cool kids, I was trying to figure out what to do. So I tried out for the play again. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of fun with that. Met some great people. Met the director of that show. And by the time I got into the film program at Biola and then was about to graduate, that director really encouraged me to get into commercials and into acting in general. And I was like, I don't know, you know, filmmaking's kind of my thing. But he was like, oh, but, you know, you'd be great in commercials. You got this great smile. I'm like, well, yeah, I know, but I want to get into directing. And he's like, I once knew this guy who in college, he did this bubble yum commercial and it paid for his whole college tuition. I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Let me try that. So, and it just all worked out. Like I just got turned off from like maybe getting into the business through PAing. Mm-hmm. Because it just didn't seem appealing based on friends who graduated before us and were doing it. And so I was like, yeah, maybe I'll try acting. So after I graduated, took like a few months off to go to Korea. And when I came back, our friend Caleb, he had started getting into acting. And he was like, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to go to this class. You need to sign up here. You need to do this. And let's get our headshots and resumes. So he was pretty instrumental, actually, in getting us started. And so soon after that, you know, I started doing extra work and got my first agent within a few months. Got a line on a show that I regularly was an extra on. That was my first line. I got upgraded. So I started as regular background and, basically I auditioned on set and got the line. As they said, because diversity wins. It was between me and a white guy. So appreciate that. And then,
for the record, Bobo is a Korean man.
I don't know if you can hear it, but I am a Korean man. Maybe I talk like this and you hear Korean man, but I don't normally talk like that. And then I booked a commercial, a Carfax commercial through my agent. And then from there, it just kind of started rolling. I booked a couple other lines on shows, a couple more commercials. Things kept on kind of building from there.
What would you say is the highlight so far for you? What's the coolest thing if someone were asking you, what's the coolest thing you've done in acting for you?
Man, I have a lot of great stories and I can talk about them forever, but I know you only got an hour. So, some of the coolest.
I only asked for one.
It's a mixed bag because there's a tie.
Okay.
Some of the coolest ones were, probably, you know, the first is always memorable. So that was Secret Life of the American Teenager. And that was great because they ended up cutting my scene, but the second AD called and told me that the executive producer wanted to make it up to me and put me back in. Mm. So they did. And I was written into the script. The character's name was Bo and I'm Bobo. So I was like, well, that's gotta be me. And it was, so, That was great. I was on,
by the way, do you feel like you have to explain to new people why your name is Bobo, like every time?
I used to like pretty much do that all the time.
You still,
but I got pretty sick of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a mouthful.
But as a stage name now, do people kind of just accept it as a unique name, or do they still want to know, like, okay, what is this name?
Yes and no. You know, I'm actually surprised when people don't ask about it. And I'm kind of like, hey, I'm Bobo. And they're like, okay, cool, Bobo. I'm like, well, you don't want to know why I'm Bobo? So you don't want to hear the story? I mean, it's pretty weird.
I mean, it's not really much of a story.
Well, no. And when I tell the story, so I have fun with it. You know, the story is you and our friend Eric gave me that nickname in college because I'm Robert. And all my life I've been all sorts of nicknames, Bobby, Bobo, but you guys did Bobo, and it stuck the second day of college. And I would try to introduce myself to people as Robert, and they were like, no, I thought you were Bobo. I was like, I guess I am. So I kept going with it, and then getting into acting, it was just a much more memorable name, so I kept going with that. And so I joke with people.
Do you think it helps you?
I think so, yeah. Because people are like, oh, Bobo, I remember that name, or... oh, I've heard of you. I heard about Bobo, because I don't. There's no other Bobos, I think, like active right now.
Okay.
There's like, I guess Kathy Bates goes by Bobo.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then there's an actor named Jonah Bobo, which is very confusing because that was on Crazy Stupid Love, and I was an extra on that. And they would yell out Bobo, and I was like, huh? Oh, no, not me. My big shot? No. Okay. And yeah, so I joke around. I say, like, they say, oh, Bobo, is that short for something? And I'm like, yeah, short for Bobo fur. But oh, yeah. I'm like Christopher, but Bobo fur. And they're like, oh, wow, interesting. Or I'll go with like Bobo Angelo. And they go for that. But I can't keep it. I have a good heart. I can't keep it up for very long. I don't actually think I have a good heart, but that's what we say as a joke.
Sorry. And then what was your second highlight you were going to get into?
Another highlight, second one of a few. No, it was on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes.
That was surreal. I was in the back of an ambulance playing a paramedic with Larry David and Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Hmm.
Basically as a fly on the wall.
And that was in just this past season, right?
This was it was the season finale of the latest season, season 9. Fatwa. And that's the name of the episode.
Hmm.
That was awesome because I didn't even audition for it. And Allison Jones, casting director, who did like The Office and Freaks and Geeks, Parks and Rec, like all these huge comedies that I love, that mm-hmm. we would watch all the time.
Yeah.
She cast me in that without me even auditioning for it. So that was crazy. And it's all improv too. So that was also a bit nerve wracking going into a scene with those heavyweights and trying to insert myself, but not step on toes or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. It was the last shot of the day, so they weren't like the most talkative, but they were very nice. I got a couple things in there in like our first take, and they responded to it. So that was pretty neat. But none of that made the cut. So just the story of a lot of my career.
So you knew that you liked acting early on. What was it initially that like made you gravitate towards it?
I think it was the play aspect
mm-hmm.
at first. That's what I did as a child playing with G.I. Joes, always making up stories and creating characters and, you know, watching movies and I'd do impressions and I would try to like do the voices and, people would always get a kick out of that. Like one of the earliest hits was Dr. Evil. People love that.
How about no?
How about
Scott?
No, Scott? I want chicken. I want liver. Meow mix, please deliver. That was a good one. according to people. Okay. So yeah, just playing, and you know, it's cathartic. It's, you get to be these people you're normally not. And a lot of that has to do with growing up, probably partly as an Asian American, you know, we kind of grew up in generally a more strict household, you know, focus on study and like getting straight A's. Like, it's kind of that stereotypical thing. Mm-hmm. But so when I got a chance to like play, I like went for it, you know, whether mm-hmm. video games or cards or all the nerdy things I did then. And then, but then when it was acting, it was like, oh wow, this is a whole new level mm-hmm. of that. And yeah, and I just had a lot of pent up passion that I couldn't really express a lot of times. If I did, it was like usually by myself. Like, I would get so angry playing video games, but I would never show it if anyone else was around. Like, one time I was playing video games and I thought no one was in the room, and I was just like dropping F-bombs like crazy. Like, this is, I don't know, early high school. And I was like losing at this wrestling game. And that game was so infuriating. And I was just like, F, F, F. And I hear a behind me, and I turn around, my grandpa's there, who doesn't speak English at all. So I was like, and I just turn, and I'm just like, oh. And I go back to playing games, and then I'm just completely quiet after that. So that's an example of kind of like how I would present myself versus like when I had a moment to really express myself, it would come out just heightened. And so in acting, it would be that, but now I had an outlet to express that freely in front of a lot of people. And yeah, and telling stories too. I love to be a part of stories, you know, as a filmmaker as well. You know, that's a big passion of mine. And, you know, obviously we see, as we read the Gospels, we see Jesus telling stories continually, telling parables. So, you know, that's how we're built, to know and understand stories, to connect to them, to find, you know, the themes and apply it to ourselves. So that was definitely a big part of it too.
And what, being Asian American, what impact have you felt that has had so far in your career, if any? Like, has it made any kind of difference? Has it been challenging in any way? Like, how does it affect
you? First of all, I don't know if you've ever labeled me as that, like,
well, I'm
to
just,
my face.
That is the
no, I know. It's just
nomenclature that people use. I don't even think of you in those terms, but you mentioned it.
So I know. So that's why it's funny hearing it from your lips. It's like, wait, who am I talking to right now? Yes, but no. Obviously, I am that. So, I think it has actually benefited me quite a bit. And so like the Secret Life of the American Teenager story, like they very explicitly, you know, when they decided between me and the white guy, it was like they handed me the sides, the script, and they're like, diversity wins. And so I think I've been on the positive end of that a lot of times. And just right now is a great time to be Asian American in the arts, in film and TV specifically, because there is kind of this surge in popularity, you know, Crazy Rich Asians just coming out. And but it was building up to that even before then. And so I think I came kind of right at the right time on the scene to, because they were looking for more diversity. They were looking for more, I think Koreans too, a lot of times, because the Korean film scene, like in South Korea, was starting to blow up and crossing over with K-pop and all these Gangnam Style and everything.
Did you consider staying there and just trying to be an actor in South Korea?
Yeah, I did. So my little reprieve in after Biola, that was kind of one of the goals while I was there, was to see if I can get something going, but I'm too short, too overweight. Yeah, for what? Koreans. I mean, I recognize I'm not actually like heavy, but for a Korean, I'm...
What?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Well, I mean, look at, you know, Korean pop culture and yeah, but like everyone
who's
sticks.
The guy who's in every, he's always in Bong Joon-ho.
Oh, yeah.
He's
definitely an exception. He's like, okay. Yeah. what's his name? I can't think of it right now. Kang Sung-ho, I think. But yeah, you know, but you look at all the other Korean actors. Like, that's what I would get when my dad, because he's pretty well connected in Korea, so he would bring me to his friends working in the industry. And, you know, he's like, hey, what do you think of this, of my son? What do you think? And, like, almost across the board, they're like, yeah, he's pretty good looking, but he needs to lose some weight.
It's so bizarre to me. I've never...
Yeah. I mean, you know, coming out of college, I was a little heavier for my size. You know, I'm pretty short. I don't know if you can hear that as well, but
oh, they can hear it.
I'm long-winded to make up for it, but so they would say like, oh, he can't speak Korean like that well.
Mm.
Even though I was trying to go for like the American angle, like, but I'm American, so if you need English speaking actors, but they're just like, yeah, but he needs to lose some weight and probably not dress so American.
No, it's really funny.
But yeah, no, my wife says all the time, she's like, you just look so American compared to other like real quote unquote Koreans. which I know. I mean, I call myself a banana, you know, as I mentioned in
what?
Crazy Rich Asians. Yellow on the outside, white on the inside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. which that's been a thing long before that movie. And so I was like, oh, they finally put it in something.
Hmm.
But, yeah, so it's helped and it's, and, but I don't know if that's, it's really hurt. And if it has, I haven't seen it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's been that's not true. I guess I have seen, you know, when I've auditioned for a commercial or something and I see it on air and I see who booked it, it's, you know, a white guy or something. It's like, oh, okay, well that makes sense.
But in terms of like the filmmakers or actors that you idolize, you never thought of yourself as like, I can only look up to Korean filmmakers and Korean actors, like
no,
it was all American.
Yeah I mean, yeah, I like I said, I'm pretty, you know, whitewashed, but I don't know if I'd say idolized.
You don't want to idolize.
Not idolize.
Do you have some of those like Korean filmmakers and actors that you do look up to or
yeah, I mean,
inspired by?
Being like, growing up in Portland, you know, it's a very white city. And so that was definitely my main influence. And so like, I love Spielberg, I love Scorsese, I like Robert Zemeckis, you know, as I got older, Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, and I never thought like, oh, I love these white directors.
Yeah.
But, you know, it took a while for me to kind of get more in touch with my culture, really appreciate it. My brother is really into Korean cinema, and so he would show me these movies like Old Boy and, you know, other movies from that director too, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Park Chan-wook, and yeah, so as I watched that, I was like, oh wow, this is great. And obviously I can identify with a lot of things within those movies, like Korean culture, and as I'm watching it, but at the same time I would see it and be like, well, things are like, some of these things are so cheesy, or like some of these things, but it would be like kind of across the board in these movies, they would kind of have these tendencies, and you know, started to think like, oh, that's kind of just the Korean style.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Conan Without Borders, where he goes to South Korea?
Oh yeah.
That's really funny. Goes and he does the scene,
yeah,
like with, yeah, the, on the show or whatever.
His Korean was terrible in that, but it was barely understandable.
That was a really funny episode.
It was really funny. Yeah, I watched that with my mom and my family, and they all laughed a lot.
So, obviously, like, we really connected with comedy and having a similar sense of humor. And besides the puns, Bobo likes puns. I'm not really into puns, but...
But sometimes...
Yeah, you know, sometimes.
Sometimes you go for it.
I can... A lot of times it's like, you know, Mike Myers, he'll do puns.
Yeah.
But it's more the like mugging after the pun.
That
is what makes me laugh.
Yeah.
You know? So comedy is something that you're really into. Do you see yourself mainly as a comedic actor, or is there not really a labeling that you...
I kind of feel more of a comedic actor, but I the first play I did was a very serious, dry, often people described it as sleepy drama. It was called Life is a Dream, and I played like this castaway prince, and that was like my foray into acting, and it was very serious, but you know, people were very complimentary to my performance on it, on my performance. And so, you know, I've always felt like, oh, drama is something I can do. But I like to have more fun and laugh and make people laugh. And you know, they say like comedy is harder than drama. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of pride in me being like, oh, I can do comedy really well. So, you know, just like I can slip down into drama, watch that. But comedy is more of a higher art form. I don't really think of it that pretentiously, but.
So what about, improv? You didn't really go that direction so much.
Not so much. So I did a little improv in high school, and that's kind of where like my drama teacher, I did it in class. So it wasn't like I did an improv troupe or like UCB or anything, but that's where my teacher noticed my knack for it. And so I kept going with that. And then, you know, by the time college came around, and we would joke around and improv all the time. And, you know, Alex and I would just go on for hours improvising back and forth. So I felt like by the time I started getting into acting, I had a pretty good base for that. And so, not that I didn't need to take any improv classes, but I didn't want to spend tons of money on it. But ironically, right, like as I started acting, I had gotten into filmmaking more. And so a director instinct in me would kick in, and I would try to direct the scene while doing improv, and that kind of backfired, because you shouldn't do that in improv. And so then I kind of like shied away from it for a couple years, and I was like insecure to take a class or something. Then I got comfortable with it again. And now I feel, you know, I really enjoy doing improv. So like when Curb happened, I was like, it was a little, like I said, nerve wracking because of who I was in the scene with. But at the same time, I was pretty comfortable with, you know, the improv aspect of it. And then also in Arrested Development, when I did that, like soon after Curb, we improvised. The director, you know, Troy Miller, who was an executive producer on that, he encouraged improv. And so like some of the scene, and I'm still waiting for that second half of the season to come out on Netflix, because I end up kind of being like this, not like a important character, but in the scene I kind of take over. I'm a delivery guy delivering Chinese food to this law firm, and like in a series of vignettes, I kind of end up like taking over the law firm. And a lot of that at the end was improv'd, and that was a blast. And the director was like, you know, turned to me after, was like, hey man, really good job. And so that was good. And that restored a lot of confidence in me.
Cool. Yeah.
So thanks for having me.
That wasn't that long of a pause. I was going to see how long you would let it pause before you would try to say something. That wasn't very long.
But it looks like you had nothing. So I was improvising.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's talk about the disappointments so far. What?
Oh, yeah. I can go on about that.
Talk about what has been hard about trying to pursue this career of acting.
I mean, it's just kind of a continual cycle of disappointment a lot of times. You go audition after audition and you work really hard at it and you go to Santa Monica and sit through traffic for the, 2 second line reading that you get, nothing from the casting director, and then you go home just like kicking yourself and repeating the line a million times and like, I should have done it that way. And so it's like that all the time. And then it's like, you get a call back, and then you get put on a veil, you're on hold, so like they want you to hold the dates because that's when they're shooting. So that means it's usually down to you and anywhere from like one other person to like 10 other people, but it's a much smaller crop. And so for instance, The Hangover Part 2, was one where I was on a veil. I was, down to me and I don't know how many other people, but Mason Lee, who eventually ended up getting that. That was, could have been a career changer for me. And so I was praying and I was, just trying to trust and also really, really hoping. And obviously as the dates got closer and I didn't hear anything, I figured, and I was right. So, that was pretty disappointing, but, and then there's also the aspect of like just trying to make a living and trying to survive. And, you get married and you have a family and you're trying to support the family. And so you're doing that. Mm-hmm. There's, many fruitless months. There's a lot of dry seasons and, persisting is a huge part of acting. Because a lot of the times it's getting through those disappointments and it's trusting in God, trusting in, his plan and his timing and recognizing in humility, like, well, there's a reason why I haven't booked that thing or why I haven't, gotten that big job. And, really examining and trying to learn from those things. But I will say, as far as the Hangover 2 thing, with all these disappointments, you see how God works it out for good. And, with me not booking that time that I would have been filming, is the time that I met Callie, met my wife.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So talk about God working something out for good there, for my good. And I see that all the time, like not always as directly and to that stature, but I didn't book that. Well, that show is something I wouldn't want to work on anyway for its content or whatever reason. And, I heard Thailand was really hot and kind of hellish in its shooting and stuff. So things like that. But I mean, yeah, there's so much disappointment all the time. There's so much of that and like making friends and losing friends and friends moving away and just being in LA for an extended period of time. You just get to see the whole gamut of life and how it plays out and, and politics sometimes with, producers or cast or crew or whatever. Yeah. And so there's a lot of that, but I definitely, you know, faith is the reason why I've been able to get through all that relatively unscathed. And, yeah, if it weren't for that, I don't know where I'd be.
What do you think keeps you in the game? What keeps you wanting to continue to pursue it?
Well, honestly, I feel like, we had another one of these moments where every time I kind of feel like, I think I'm good. Like at this point I've had a pretty good run, you know, I haven't booked the big thing, but, had a lot of great small successes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just as I'm kind of winding down and, you know, Callie and I are plotting like, okay, so maybe we should look into this to generate income. Maybe we should look at these side jobs, mm-hmm. you know, all these sorts of things. Like literally it would be, you know, the day that we're about to start something or do something different than acting or filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
like I would book a job,
right?
Or like an opportunity would come out of nowhere that, you know, completely unexpected, that is a great opportunity, like direct something. Or a lot of times it was, yeah, I would book an acting job, like this month we were about to, I don't think I told you this, did I tell you? Yeah, I did, about doing the YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna do all the toy stuff, but
right, yeah.
And then I booked Jane the Virgin, and they brought me back on that, and then things just got really busy. So, I feel like it's God just telling us, like, I put you here for a reason. I put you on this path,
yeah.
And so, you know, I think He sees that we're trying to remain faithful and, you know, be good stewards with what we have, and but then, you know, as soon as we start to like majorly divert from that, He kind of just pushes us right back on.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but obviously we both want to make it.
Mm-hmm.
We both, and we might have different definitions of what that is, but we're pursuing this thing, and it could be that God wants us to pursue this thing and have this career, have this pursuit, even if we're never actually even going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
If we died next week before getting it, or if we die 20 years from now and we still haven't got it.
Yeah.
But He still wanted us on that journey because of the people that we met, because of the relationships and things that happen in ways He was using us, mm-hmm. as we were doing that thing that would have been different if we were trying to do something else.
Yeah. You know? And that's where I feel, you know, the most rewarded in my career, is those moments when I'm genuinely connecting with other people. And Callie, you know, it wasn't necessarily through acting related things, but, you know, I met her, led her to Christ, and you know, married her. And obviously that changed my life. And just the interactions I'll have on set with people, you know, as for many years, as I was doing background work, I was like, why am I still doing background work? This, like, I'm still here after all these years, and I booked all this other stuff. So I've had a taste, but, and that's not what I want to do. But so why am I still here? And then it's like that day I have a conversation with another extra or somebody who, like, it just is religiously tinged. And then by the end of it, like, I'm praying for that person, or, you know, they're thanking me for just talking about God with them and stuff. And, so it's time after time, that's where it's like, okay, like clearly God has me here for a reason.
Right. And you making it will not be the validation that all this time you were doing what God wanted you to be doing. That's not the thing that will, because if you don't ever, it's still true.
Yeah.
That you were doing what God wanted you to do, and He was using you despite what the destination ended up being.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, definitely from middle school, when I knew I wanted to get into entertainment, and, you know, at some point in high school, I had someone prophesy over me, and they said, you know, you're going to do big things. I'll never forget that. And because that's what I felt like, just like every other, you know, aspiring filmmaker and actor and whoever, like, I'm going to do something big. And yeah, I've, like, part of living out in faith has been learning to let that, in a sense, die, you know, and like die as in dying to myself and picking up my cross and saying like, whatever, wherever, Lord, whatever, wherever, whenever. So whatever you want me to do, wherever that is and whenever that is, you know, I'm willing to follow you. And, and that means just being humble again and recognizing, okay, God, that's not where you want me, or maybe I'll get there many, many years from now, or maybe not, but either way, being content and having his surpassing peace throughout, and recognizing there's work to be done wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about actors turned directors. So, okay. So you obviously always wanted to direct as well,
mm-hmm.
but, and maybe that's true of most actors turned directors. Like it's a, like a thing that maybe they wanted to do in the past, but then they decided to act.
Mm-hmm.
But just in general, actors turned directors, what are the things that, what are commonalities that you see in actors turned directors? And do you see any kind of thing like, this is what seems to work to do it at this point in your career? Or, you know, like they might make the same types of films because they have that background, or there's something distinct about the films made by people who are also actors.
I see. I think, well, when I had kind of decided I wanted to get into acting to kind of get around to directing, it wasn't as much of a trend as it is now. Like these days, it's like every other actor, you're like, really? They're directing something? Like, but I've only been in a couple of things. Like, it seems just like everybody, every actor wants to be a director.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally fine because I'm one of them too. And some of them are turn out to be really great directors. And, you know, and if that's obviously what they want to do, then they can. But it kind of, I don't know, it kind of killed it for me because I was like, oh, that's going to be cool. Because at that point, there weren't a lot, you know, like Woody Allen and, I mean, he's a much older example, but I think Ben Affleck had kind of started to do it right as we were graduating. And that was, you know, I was like, oh, wow, he has a good touch. And so at that point, it was like, oh, you have to establish yourself pretty well in the industry, you know, acquire some accolades. And then at that point, then you can use your name recognition and stuff in order to be able to direct a film. But now it seems like, because of the advent of, you know, crowdfunding and just internet and so many different sources of being able to put something together, put a production together, it's like everybody is doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, what I see in other actors turned directors that I'd identify with is like a lot of times they go for something smaller, like character driven.
Mm-hmm. Zach Braff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Garden State. Actually that's a good, really good example of something that kind of showed me. It's like, oh yeah, I could do that. Like I do want to do like blockbusters and things like that probably someday. But, you know, as an actor, that's what you're doing. You're getting into character and you're telling the story through your character. And so, seeing that, how that translate into making a film that's more driven by characters, that's definitely appealing. And, you know, a lot of times the directors, the actors turned directors act in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if someone like me, who's not a household name, then that would be a great showcase for me, you know, especially if I'm writing it and everything.
I mean, it makes sense to me that an actor would make a good director because of their experience, obviously, and they'd have a leg up on directing other actors.
Mm-hmm.
But then I can also see kind of the pitfalls of when you're an actor and you look at things a certain way, and especially if you're acting in your movie and you have this like dual, you know, actors' senses of wanting to only present themselves a certain way or whatever, and not having the remove that a director does, you know? So I can kind of see, you know, the pluses and minuses of actors directing, but there's so many, the track record, I don't know. It'd be interesting to look at the list of like Rotten Tomato scores and how good the films have been. But it seems like most of the time when an actor turns director, they are pretty successful.
They do some good stuff. Or, you know, they eventually find it, like John Krasinski. I didn't see his first movie, but apparently, you know, it wasn't great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, but you know, now A Quiet Place is, you know, that was great. I didn't see it, but it's great.
You haven't seen it?
I want to see it.
That's great. I haven't seen it.
But yeah, and like even you know, watching a TV show, and you know, at the credits in the beginning, you see directed by like John Hamm, or like, you know, I would see that on like a lot of these shows. And
on the TV side, I don't really count that, because on the TV side, you're just, you know, continuing on something that's already been put in place, you know, and it's like a team who's been making this show for a year. They got it. Yeah. Like,
that's true. But I think like having like specifically with Gina Rodriguez on Jane the Virgin, she's directed the last two episodes I was in. And the first one she did not direct, though. And so seeing the contrast of, you know, in her vision and just how involved she was, and, you know, her understanding of like camera placement and coverage, and then also at the same time, you know, being in character herself and then talking to the actors, it's a lot. And, you know, it's one thing, like, yeah, there's definitely an element of, you know, she's kind of coming in with the same crew and everybody. So, you know, she doesn't have to do a lot per se, but, you know, a director, a TV show does a heck of a lot. And, you know, I've seen where directors have not quite had the same vision, and it's upset crew members, and, you know, being a part of the crew, you're just like, oh my gosh, what is happening right now? This director doesn't seem to know what they're doing. And I think that translates over into film, because then you just have such a better understanding of the collaborative effort and what it takes.
I'm trying to think of some actor turned directors that did not come out the gate strong. John Krasinski. I know Natalie Portman directed a movie that made no splash, but I never saw it. I don't know.
Or it's like Forrest Whitaker doing First Daughter or whatever. It's like
First Dot.
Yeah,
he directed that.
Yeah, I don't know if that was his very first movie, but it was like, I just remember kind of laughing. It's like Forrest Whitaker, this great serious actor, you know, Oscar nominated, and it's like, what's your passion project, Forrest? Whatever you want to do. It's like, I want to do a story about the president's daughter meeting a man, and they fall in love. Forrest, yeah, if that's what you want to do. I could be totally wrong, but
most of the time it's someone who has had success as an actor turning director, but other times it's someone who is like getting a film made by directing it to further their career as an actor, right? Like it's like they're not getting put in stuff, so they're gonna make the thing that will be a breakout for them.
Yeah. Did Lake Bell direct, right? In the world?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Like her, she was mainly a voiceover actor. And she had, you know, roles in lots of little things. Well, not little things, but smaller parts, not like the leading.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she put herself in that movie, and I mean, I don't know what she's doing right now, but
it's great. I didn't see it.
Yeah,
it's great. No, I actually did see it.
Yeah. But yeah, she could be an example of that, and I'm sure it helped her. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Or like, you know, because she hasn't been the lead in another movie. But like the guys, obviously, It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, you know,
creating that in order to.
yeah,
launch the career.
Right. And, and yeah, we're seeing that a lot, like workaholic guys and Broad City Girls. And, you know, that right now is definitely the time for that. And, you know, that's why I'm trying to do that myself right now.
Which is a perfect segue to talk about your current project.
Okay.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I guess it hasn't really been made public, but that's okay. It's
breaking news, folks, here on Salty Cinema. I'm doing a Howard Coast sound.
Sounds like Sam Munson.
Well, that's like my news guy voice. So when I once played a news guy, I had to use my news guy.
Award-winning performance.
Best actor, 2006.
This is ridiculous, but thanks. Was his entire award speech at the Biola Film Festival for his performance as Sam Munson in The Legend of George Strong Bailey.
Look it up.
Yeah, please do. But no, okay, so my show, it's called Follow Me, Marky Lee. And I won't get into a lot of details yet, but I wrote it, directed a pilot, like a pitch pilot, and had a lot of help, obviously from everyone I collaborated with on it, but I'm acting in it as well, and kind of about a guy who is trying to achieve social media influencer status, and yeah, right now we're currently it's maybe gonna get made.
it's in development.
We're hoping it gets funding, and there's a chance it could, but I'm writing away on it and I'm having a blast. I can't wait to show you, because I'm sure you'll laugh along with me. And that's the idea too, is because a lot of times, you know, actors will get typecast, and I haven't necessarily been typecast, but, you know, I'll kind of play like the side characters, never like the leading man. And I don't necessarily have that aspiration, but, like for instance, the character Marky Lee, you know, he's not a leading man type, but it's kind of more akin to my personality, or it's like slightly dorky, but, you know, has fun and you know, has a lively, outgoing side to him, but also kind of shuts down in the face of intimidation, which is like, you know, tapping into a younger version of me. But yeah, and taking that and letting that kind of lead it. And also, as an Asian American, like presenting a different side to that, you know, isn't as seen as much.
So do you prefer playing roles that are similar to who you actually are, or do you prefer playing stuff that's totally different and like real characters?
I like them both. I mean, I like, because it's fun, it's easy, it's comfortable, and you know, there's just when I'm playing characters like myself, you just bring a lot more to it. Right, as far as like just personal experience, and but you know, playing a character is a lot of fun too. You get to be someone else, you get to play pretend, and that really exercises a lot of your creative skills as far as like, you know, character building and making certain choices and committing to them. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty
no preference.
Lame, typical answer. I like both.
Hey, if that's the truth.
Yeah, it's the truth. And that's our show. No, I could see you were going to say something this time.
Well, I'm trying to escape me.
I can talk about
it escaped
La La Land.
What about
La La Land? That was fun.
Oh yeah, you were in La La Land.
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh, I remember now.
Oh.
I lost it again.
Well, I'll just tell the La La Land story while you. Hang on a second. Because that was another one of my favorite things.
Okay. Tell
I was I was in La La Land.
Is that the end of the story?
I just really wanted to say that. No.
Wait, hang on.
Yeah.
Your favorite movies that you have been an extra in.
Okay.
Or you could just list all the movies you've been in. You can find Boba.
Okay, you can see me prominently in Alvin in the Chipmunks 2, the Squeakquel.
Can you say Alvin again?
I cannot.
Alvin.
It was too hard the first time. I will not attempt that again.
Alvin. In the Chipmunks.
And the Chipmunks 2.
Now,
I got
now.
Squeakquel out. That's hard to say.
Squeakquel.
Squeakquel.
Yeah. In these movies.
Yeah.
That you're listing, are actually credited with some kind of
thing. No. I mean,
You're prominently visible.
Yes.
But you don't have a...
Like, these are the ones that...
But you wouldn't be in the list of credits.
No. Okay. As an extra, you're
never.
Not really ever.
Okay.
But these are the ones that friends were like, hey, I saw you, and which is weird, the amount of people that saw Alvin and the Chipmunks 2 this week. Well,
yeah, you wouldn't want to admit that you saw...
You'd think so, but they were very excited about it.
Okay, so Alvin?
Yeah. The Social Network,
which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Me too, and that was a great experience. David Fincher personally gave us direction, us like the other extras.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool. And I had the thought, I was like, David Fincher chose to put me on screen,
and he chooses every little thing that appears on the screen in every frame. He's very particular.
Yeah. So, Dave, if you're listening, remember me.
Oh man, he is most assuredly not. Listening.
He'll get there. Let's see. Movies are. I've done a lot more
Land.
TV. Yeah, La La Land. But I had a line in that though. So that.
Okay, that's
yeah,
a I was step above
in the credits. Yeah,
yes,
for that.
And your credit was.
It was as photographer's assistant.
Photographer's assistant.
Yeah, but in the movie, the actor playing the photographer, Miles Anderson, very, very kind British guy. Not that British people wouldn't be kind. But
wait a second. Did Social Network win Best Picture?
No.
No.
It lost to King's Speech.
I was going to say, you would have been in two Best
Picture. I would have been in two almost Best Picture winners.
Oh, yeah.
La La Land didn't win either. Yeah.
Wow. You were in
I thought that was going to be it.
You were in two almost Best Picture.
Two should have been Best Pictures,
wow.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, like some of the movies I knew where I was, like Crazy Stupid Love. Like I could see myself just at the very end of the frame. Man, I guess I haven't done a lot of movies where you really see me.
Hey, that's a strong list, I think.
It's pretty good. Squeakquel being the top there. Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Will Smith, and you are listening to Salty Cinema. Woo! Y'all feel that?
Why do you have to do it so loud?
Because he's loud like that.
All right, what else you got?
Evening. This is Ian McKellen, and you are listening to Salty Cinema.
Okay.
That is good.
Hey, this is Danny Glover, and you're listening to Salty Cinema.
Oh man, that was bad. I haven't done that in a long time. Oh man.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Hey, mother. Nah. You know, I do a lot of black people, apparently.
Is there anyone like, that's what I was going to say, is there anyone closer to you?
Hello, this is Jackie Chan, and you are listening to Salty Cinema.
Sounds more like Forrest Whitaker.
They all kind of blend together.
Didn't you used to do a... Well, this was probably... It was an impression of Ben Stiller doing Tom Cruise more than it was Tom Cruise.
This is Tom Cruise, and you're listening to Salty Cinema.
That was pretty rusty. Oh, man.
Good times.
What happened to me?
Good times.
What's happened?